Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show, WILK News Radio. You can get us anywhere on the Odyssey app and now the iHeartMedia app. It is 409, 83 degrees on this Tuesday, July 8th, 2025. And as you heard, the rain is moving through our area, so just be careful driving out there. There will be some spots where there'll be heavy downpours and thunderstorm warnings. It looks like the main chunk of it, at least for Wilkes-Barre, will be just some heavy rain. It looks like the concentrated storms are north of us and south of us right now. So if that keeps up, we'll be all right. It's Tuesday, July 8th, 2025. And like every Tuesday, we bring in our friend Tommy Marquez, a Navy veteran, was a senior staffer in Congress for many years, and now he helps us navigate our veteran systems out there for our thousands, hundreds of thousands of veterans across the nation. Tommy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I really appreciate it.
All right. So what do we got on the agenda today?
Well, I've got a major announcement from the VA regarding some of the budgetary constraints that they've had and employees. And, you know, you were talking about the budget and how it works there for your state and how it's affecting, you know, all sorts of different aspects within your state. The same thing happens at the VA. And with the VA, we know that they have been trying to not reduce the budget, despite what people have said. That's completely false. The budget, as we talked about last week, increased by about 10%. But they've tried to reduce the amount of employees in an effort to reduce bureaucracy, make the VA more efficient, and they've right-sized a lot of departments, too. So in other departments where the benefits and the bureaucracy was heavy and unnecessarily burdening the veteran, they've reduced those numbers and they put some of those numbers in other places. But they also did a voluntary retirement and resignations program for the VA. And that program has been pretty beneficial to the point where early on everyone was saying how this was going to, you know, destroy the VA by doing the reduction of 30,000 employees. Well, the VA has already reduced 17,000 employees since January 1st, and they expect to have another 12,000 in the next couple of months, about 2.5 months from now. And because of those numbers and loss, that equals a 6% decrease to the VA employees that they were looking for. And so they're going to be able to, in 2.5 months, keep the VA at the size that it is. And what's notable about this is with the cuts of the 30,000 people, early on, you know, they were talking numbers of 80,000 employees that needed to be cut. But because of the 30,000, the departments that they've reshifted focus and moving people around, they're saying now at the VA, the Secretary of the VA just came out, Doug Collins, and said, hey, guess what? We're actually going to keep it this size. Once we eliminate those 30,000 jobs, because of budgetary constraints and because of the increase in budget, we're going to be able to keep it. So that's 50,000 less than people thought. And a lot of people are extremely excited about this at the VA employee union, but that's not my concern. My concern is the veterans and is the service still up, you know, up to par. And I'm going to be frank with you, Rob. In the past, you know, you and I, we've talked about the VA service, and it is not a longstanding tradition of excellence, right? We've heard millions and millions of complaints. So seeing the things that we've seen recently with the VA processing over 2 million disability claims faster than ever before and on a record pace with the reduction in force, also with the backlog reduction, about 200,000 claims out of the backlog, it dropped to about 200,000 claims, which was a 25% reduction within the first 4 months of the Trump administration. And then we also, like I said, we saw that budget getting increased by 10%, I think that the VA is going to work in this number, and I think it's going to be more efficient and more beneficial to the veterans.
Yeah, we've seen, even when you say there's 17,000 less employees, they have been more efficient in the past couple of months. They've been cranking out backlogs like they haven't before, and they've been clearing claims like they haven't before. And to put things in perspective, the VA has just under 600,000 employees. So when we're talking only about 17,000 that are taking early retirement, it's really not a great number. It's kind of just realigning the VA to where it should be.
Yeah, it really is. And keep in mind, let's be 100% honest. People in federal employment, I've got all sorts of federal employment rules. I've never sent something to a federal employee on a Friday afternoon. The people who are retiring or close to retirement or in these programs, these are people who are not highly motivated individuals, most likely. I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush, but more likely than not, they're not highly motivated individuals, and they were hurting the culture of the VA. When I was a congressional staffer, the amount of phone calls I got from VA employees versus any other federal agency was almost 3-to-1 on complaints about the workplace environment there. And the majority of the complaints were that they were hard chargers themselves, the people who were complaining, and they felt it was unfair at the VA because there were so many people there taking up space, slowing things down, making things unnecessarily bureaucratic, and just having a bad attitude and working there, and they thought it was unfair.
Yeah, and the fact that they are showing metrics now that they are doing a more streamlined work, that things are getting done faster and better, you know, shows the motivation is there. They are putting people in the right positions to get the job done, even with less bodies. And listen, let's make no mistake. Government, any government agency, not just the VA, but any government agency should never be an employment agency. You know, they're not there for jobs. They're there right. to provide a service to our veterans. And, you know, the more you grow that bureaucracy, the less service our veterans get. One of the things that I love about this entire thing is it excludes direct care workers to our veterans. So like the rhetoric that's out there, no nurses, no therapists, no doctors, they're not part of this. They're not part of the hiring freeze. And it's just nonsense when they say, you know, they're laying off bunches of nurses and we're streamlining, like our governor here in Pennsylvania, we're streamlining the hiring process. You know, I've reached out to the governor's office to give me a number, how many VA nurses they've hired since they created a whole process. He came on this very station and said they created a whole process to streamline the hiring of nurses let go from the VA. They can't give me a single number.
No, they can't. And I challenge people on social media, Rob. Show me an example of where someone was fired that is in any of those jobs, a nurse, a doctor. Show me examples of where these people are being laid off. And they don't. And you know, they had an example. That person would be famous on media right now. It'd be on every podcast on the left side that there is. And it's just not happening. I've asked them to show me cuts to programs where the money hasn't been reallocated and used, you know, more efficiently. And I'll give you an example. The homeless veteran outreach program at the VA is atrocious. There's no shortage of homeless veterans, right? Majority of homeless personnel are veterans. And what they did is they found that program is ineffective. And so they changed that money, reallocated it. And what they've done at the VA is they just announced last week, I think it was $42 million in grants, eligible organizations that are providing veterans with representation for landlord-tenant disputes, assisting with court proceedings on child custody, child support, estate planning, helping veterans obtain benefits like disability compensation, and criminal cases even. The VA has never done that. They've never had a legal services veterans program, right? That is always, the VA would always say, hey, that's a personal matter. You're on your own. The VA has allocated now money into a grant program for organizations out, like Pipetter Foundation, to help provide legal services for veterans. That's never been done. And they did a lot of this. And also they're doing a lot of this with the homelessness outreach through nonprofit organizations who specialize in this. And they're able to take the money from that program from bureaucrats who are sitting in the central office D.C. Location to the streets in San Diego, Pennsylvania, Texas, and all throughout our country, and having outreach programs there. It's a better use of the money.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, these systems have not worked. It's interesting how... Listen, we've poured all sorts of money, and just to get away from the VA for a second, we've poured all sorts of money into homelessness, and the problem is worse than ever. We've poured all sorts of money into Social Security programs, and it's going to fail us in 10 to 12 years. Medicare and Medicaid, we've poured all sorts of money into it, increased the budgets over and over again. And it's not solvent. That U.S. education system, public education, we've poured trillions of dollars into this system, and the test scores are the worst they've ever been. If we don't start doing something different, anything different at this point, you have to be a moron, because everything that we've thrown more money at is not working at its efficiency levels.
Money and people does not equal results. You know, it's very rare in any sport that the team with the highest payroll wins the championship. You know, the Dodgers have had the highest payroll for years, and only recently did they win a World Series. It's not just throwing money at a problem that's complicated and that it's just going to resolve itself or hiring more people. There's tons of people who work at Walmart. Does anybody feel like the shopping experience there is better than at your local grocery market? Probably not. And those people are paid less. There's less of them. But they care more about the job. And culture matters. I've talked about that ad nauseum on the show. But I believe that. And maybe it comes from the fact that, again, I was not a Navy SEAL, but I got to work on the SEAL teams for a long time in the Navy. And I saw how much more efficient it was, how much more lethal it could be, and precise with a small unit tactically versus a large, you know, monstrosity in the big Navy. And I just firmly believe that it's about having the right people. It's about having the right programs. It's about having the right culture. And I think that's what we're seeing at the VA. And to the 30,000 people who are leaving, I mean, I actually applaud them. You know, it takes courage to say, like, hey, this isn't for me anymore. I got a better opportunity. I don't begrudge them. I think it's the honorable thing to do. If you don't want to be there anymore, you know, by all means, get out of it and walk away from it. That's fine. I don't have any ill will towards you. But for those who want to stay there, complain and gripe, and they come up with these stories that, oh, the VA is worse. The VA has never been great. And the one fact that we know is the larger that the VA grew and the more money that we gave the VA in their budget, the less efficient it became.
Yeah, true as always there, my friend. So, Tommy, if my listeners want to follow you, how can they do that?
You can follow me on all social media platforms at Tommy Martinez Consulting. I'm on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all platforms there, and on Twitter as well, at Tommy Martinez Consulting. I hear from your listeners all the time, and I always love talking to them. It's a great show, Rob.
Yeah, we're working on a couple of cases now together from our area,
yeah.
And really can't get into them now, but some great work behind the scenes happening, and hopefully, you know, we can go public with it when it's said and done.
Absolutely. I look forward to that, Rob.
All right, Tommy, thanks for joining the Rob O'Donnell Show this week.
Thank you, Rob.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Well, another win from the Supreme Court for the Trump administration. SCOTUS has blocked the order stopping Trump's federal layoffs. Yep, a huge win. The Supreme Court of the United States sided with President Trump in an 8-1 decision, which will allow federal workers' force cuts to go through. If you recall, there was a federal judge that said that the president could not lay off federal workers. Who's a federal judge to tell the chief executive who he can and can't hire and fire? Well, the Supreme Court saw it that way, too. 8-1. I don't know who dissented at this point, but SCOTUS blocks the order stopping Trump's federal layoffs. So he can continue to reduce the workforce in alignment with his plan. Iranian sleeper cells may be hiding in plain sight, but here's the twist, waiting to target rural America, terrorism expert warns. Yep, former FBI special agent warns that Biden administration's asylum policies created perfect condition for sleeper cells. Counterterrorism expert says that Iranian sleeper cells may be hiding in plain sight, waiting to strike rural areas in America. Following strikes by the U.S. military on several Iranian nuclear sites on June 22nd, the Department of Homeland Security issued a National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin stating that there's a heightened risk of Iranian-backed for domestic terrorism. The likelihood of violent extremists in the homeland independently mobilizing to violence in response to the conflict would likely increase if Iranian leadership issued a religious ruling calling for retaliatory violence against targets in the homeland, said the bulletin. Iran also has a long-standing commitment to target U.S. government officials and views as responsible for the death of Iranian military commanders killed in January of 2020. Former FBI agent who has worked at terrorism task forces said the terror cells might be in our backyard, where these sleeper cells might be in plain sight. And that's the real terrifying part that's putting people in place. as we've seen over the past 4 years, everyone's scrambling because certain amounts of people could come here and get in here over the past administration. We did see an uptick of Iranian nationals entering our nation. Over 1,000, to be honest with you. 700 were given asylum. Said that the Biden administration's border policies enabled Iranian illegal immigrants to come to the U.S. with impunity, creating conditions for sleeper cells to exist. They could go to the border and said they want to seek asylum. And the Biden administrator, instead of putting them into DHS housing or ICE housing and holding them where they could be properly vetted for their first appearance, whether or not they get asylum, he said they were allowed in and given dates years in the future. Following the attack on the Iranian nuclear facilities, U.S. Immigration and Customs Fortin has tamped up efforts to target Iranian illegal immigrants. Since June 18th, over 130 Iranian nationals have been arrested, multiple federal sources told News, adding that 670 Iranians are currently in ICE custody. Said that these possible sleeper cells could target America's rural areas since they're not well protected and vulnerable. There's a possibility that sleeper cells could target more rural states instead of larger cities. In fact, considering the evolution of attacks and fundamental Islamic attackers we've seen in Israel on October 7th in 2023 and in India this year, it is possible that similar attacks could happen in rural outdoor entertainment venues or populated vacation spots. Something to consider, situational awareness. We talk about it all the time. See something, say something. Yeah. Be on board with it. Certain rural areas, though, be a little harder to mess with than others. But that's if we're prepared. You know, I saw that. Did you see the story in Coney Island, New York, where the individual grabbed up the kid and started walking away with him under his arm, and then the parents chased him down? I highly implore you. He was dressed all in black and had a funny black hat on. Grabbed a child underneath his arm. Child was like 8. Grabbed the child underneath his arm, parents were totally unaware for a few seconds, and started walking away. When the parents started to rush the guy, he threw the child to the ground and fled with the parents both chasing him. If you watch that video, the mother never put her water bottle down. She was drinking a bottle of water. And as she rushed the individual while he had her child, after he threw the child to the ground and then chased him down, she continued to hold that bottle of water in her hand. Listen, I understand most people listening to me right now have never been in that situation where they had to defend themselves or their family. I mean, truly defend them. I'm not talking about someone yelling, or I'm talking about truly take action to defend possibly the lives of yourselves and your child. You really have to think that situation through. And that's why muscle memory and training comes into place. And it's not something that I want you out there training for, but it's something you should be aware of. I don't care if it's your purse. I don't care if it's your cell phone. I don't care if it's a water. I don't care what it is, unless it's another child of yours. Empty your hands and do what you need to do to end that threat. It's as simple as that. You know, it's the first thing I saw with this interaction, and it's all over social media, of the both parents rushing the guy, and they chased him down and tackled him eventually, and then police intervened, and they really didn't know what was going on, so they thought these people were beating up the individual, and then bystanders said, no, he just tried to take their child. And thankfully, he's under arrest now for attempted abduction and assault and such like that. But again, the entire time, the mother never dropped her water bottle. Spilt it a lot, but never dropped it out of her hands. So again, I don't care what that is in your hand. You free up your hands to do what you need to do. And that was the biggest takeaway I saw from that. Thankfully, the child's safe, the parents are safe, and the individual's going to jail. But there's not right people all around us. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement. Today we have two from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We're going to start off with Police Officer Brian J. Lorenzo, Philadelphia Police Department in 2012 on this day. He was killed when his department motorcycle was struck head-on by a drunk driver on I-95. Near the Cottman Avenue exit, approximately 3:15 a.m. The drunk driver was driving the wrong way on the interstate at the time. The driver was arrested at the scene and later charged with third-degree murder. He had served with the Philadelphia Police Department for 23 years, was assigned to the Highway Patrol, survived by his wife and three children. We have Patrolman William Scanlon, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police in Pennsylvania. On this day in 1898, Patrolman William Scanlon died after being kicked in the groin while placing a prisoner in the paddy wagon. He went home where he died 5 days later from internal bleeding. Patrolman Scanlon had served with the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police for 10 years. He was survived by his wife and five children. And, you know, those are our two from here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And, you know, as the summer is upon us and unfortunately police activity seems to take a uptick during this time of year, you know, we've seen, if you follow any of the, you know, police monitoring pages for our area, Scranton and Lackawanna County and Luzerne County and Wilkes-Barre, you know, they've are consistently busy for our areas. And if you see them, thank them for what they do. And that, this is not just our police, both city, town, state police, but, you know, all our first responders, our volunteer fire department members, our paid service fire department members, our EMTs. You know, it's a hard time to do a job with all that equipment. You know, putting out your turnout gear as a fireman, carrying those bags and a stretcher as an EMT, and you know, wearing that bulletproof vest and anywhere between 20 and 40 pounds worth of gear, you know, as a police officer. It's a call for service, so no doubt indeed. And I'm thankful they're there, and you should be thankful you're there. And let them know that you're thankful they're there. It's 4:40 here at WILK, 81 degrees. It's time for 2020 traffic and weather. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:45 here, 81 degrees. We do have those storms moving through the area, but it's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we have been? So let's the overview for today in U.S. history on this day, July 8th. Some significant events. 1776, the first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. That's right. The Declaration of Independence was first read out loud to the public in Philadelphia's Independence Square. Colonel John Nixon of the Philadelphia Committee of Safety read the document just 4 days after it was adopted by the Continental Congress on July 4th. Could you imagine the significance of that? Could you imagine the pride, the fear, the not knowing what was ahead? Reading that out loud for the first time at Philadelphia's Independence Square just gives you chills. And if it doesn't, you're doing it wrong. 1863. Port Hudson surrenders to the Union during the Civil War. Port Hudson, Louisiana, surrendered to Union forces under General Nathaniel P. Banks. This, combined with the fall of Vicksburg on July 4th, gave the Union complete control of the Mississippi River and split the Confederacy in two. That was 1863. 1889, the Wall Street Journal is first published. Founded by Charles Dow, Edward Jones, and Charles Bergstresser, the Wall Street Journal became one of the most influential financial newspapers in the world. 1947, the Roswell incident reported to the press. The Roswell Daily Record published the front page articles stating that a U.S. Army Air Forces had recovered a flying disc near Roswell, New Mexico. This ignited decades of speculation about UFOs and government cover-ups. If you've never been, and most of you probably haven't, if you've never been to Roswell, New Mexico, it is a unique place, to say the least. It is a unique place. My son was stationed there for a year, went to the New Mexico Military Institute before the academy. And it is in the middle of nowhere. You basically drive through farms and ranches and a lot of nothing from Albuquerque down to Roswell. Pretty desolate. and not many places to stop or get gas. But you pull into Roswell, and they have alien streetlights. There is a UFO that's crashed into the McDonald's on Main Street. The New Mexico Military Institute is a large campus, barracks-type buildings, very historic for that area. It's called the West Point of the West. And it's a, you know, it's a nice ride through there, a couple-hour ride from Roswell when you're there, because there's really not much to do in Roswell. You know, a few small restaurants, you have your McDonald's and pretty much, you know, some stores on Main Street and, you know, places to live. That's about it. But they do adopt, there is a small international airport, they call it an international airport there, but it only doesn't fly internationally, so I don't know why they call it that. But really not much. I mean, you could walk the entire town in 20 minutes. But it's a beautiful ride from Roswell through the Lincoln National Forest, through Reynoso and places like that, down into White Sands. And while we were there, you know, we figured we took in the entire alien tour while we were there, since we had to rent a car and I was going to be there for a couple of days. You know, we were in Roswell, and then we went down to White Sands through the Lincoln National Forest. And what's interesting and what's unique about the Lincoln National Forest is the only people who can live in a national forest are Native Americans. And as you drive through the road over the mountains into the Lincoln National Forest and down into the valley where White Sands is, you have these homes on either sides. A lot of them had ceremonial teepees in the front that they, you know, certain times of year they do live out there. You know, the old saying where they were given, you know, a horse for each person, you know, holds true. A lot of the yard, you saw three or four horses that were there. One of the times we drove through there, there was an older gentleman, probably in his 80s or 90s, that was in full Indian ceremonial garb, bright red with some yellow trim, and had a full head of feathers and everything, just going to get the mail. Just something unique to see. And again, when they have their ceremonies in their yard, you know, a lot of times it's just the frame of the teepee, but then they have the canvases and it's all done up for, you know, when they're out there. But you could pull over at any given time or drive with the windows open. You can hear the elk from Lincoln National Forest. It's just a very unique experience. And then you drive into White Sands, and it's like literally powder flour white sand that you go through there, and you can literally ski or sled down these hills. And it's just unbelievable, especially at sunset. And then you have the VLA, which is the very large array. That's the big thing of satellite dishes that covers multiple acres, hundreds of acres, and it's shaped like a big Y. And each dish is about the size of this building, and there's hundreds of them. So it's something interesting to see out there in Roswell. So it's funny to see that today's the day that that story was published. 1950, MacArthur receives permission to advance in Korea. During the early weeks of the Korean War, General Douglas MacArthur was granted authority to take command of the U.S. forces, making a major escalation of U.S. involvement in the conflict. Some notable birthdays on this day: John D. Rockefeller, 1839, American industrialist and philanthropist, co-founder of Standard Oil and widely regarded as one of the richest individuals in history. If you ever travel down south in Jekyll Island, Georgia, Jekyll Island, where Savannah is the north end coast of Georgia, Jekyll Island is the southernmost coast of Georgia. Jekyll Island was the basically rich people's vacation spot. And all the homes are still there, these old mansions that were there and the clubhouse and that which now is a hotel. Really interesting to go through, especially around Christmas time, because they do decorate the entire place. And the Rockefeller home is there, their summer home. Kennedy's had a home there. There's a whole bunch of names that you'd recognize. Nelson Miles, 1839, U.S. Army general who played a key role in the Indian Wars with the Spanish-American War. Kevin Bacon, yep. That one. 1958, American actor known for Footloose, A Few Good Men. Wide-reaching 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon pop culture fame. I don't have any connection with Kevin Bacon. I can't tell you anything there. Some notable deaths. Vivian Leigh, 1967, though British, her portrayal of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind cemented her status of American cultural icon. And Betty Ford, 2011, former First Lady of the United States, known for her advocacy for addiction treatment and women rights. So that's pretty much what we have today in history on this day, July 8th, 2025. Hopefully you found it interesting. It is 4:54 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:57 as we come up on the 5 o'clock hour. Hopefully those storms sweep through without any incidents here and all good the rest of the night. So Luzerne County is looking to waive residency requirements for top administrators. Yep, you heard me. The resident requirement for top administrators took effect in 2016. All division heads, the sheriff, and heads of emergency management and 911 are required to live in the county. The proposed ordinance says that the residency requirement has hindered the recruitment, selection, and retention of candidates for the aforementioned positions in county government. County Council passed the residency requirement in March of 2016 by a 6-5 vote. The county has 8 executive branch divisions: administration services, operational services, judicial services and records, correctional services, budget and financial services, human resources, the public defender's office, and the office of law. The county has not replaced Jennifer Pecora, the head of operational service, since she resigned in January. Today's meeting starts at 6 o'clock at the courthouse in Wilkes-Barre, and they're going to look to introduce an ordinance to waive the residency requirement for selected administration positions if an employee has at least 5 years of continued county employment. See, now, I don't understand how that helps with recruitment, because you would have to live in the county for 5 years. So, you know, I retention I get, but I don't see how it would help recruitment, because an employee has at least 5 years of continued county employment in order to get this waiver to not live in the county. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And, I know it's things that they did in Scranton. The police chief had to be a city resident, and I believe they had it changed to where for in the future they don't be. And again, so they could put out a bigger pool of employment, but that has its pros and cons. Each area, especially a city like Scranton, has its unique environment. But, you know, when places like New York City or L.A., you know, you had Bill Bratton, who was the police commissioner of New York City, and then he became the police chief of L.A. You know, he was the police commissioner up in Boston, and I believe he even did a little stint in Chicago. You had the police chief, Timoney, who was one of the police chiefs in New York City, became the head of police in Philadelphia for a time. So, you know, it does happen, but, you know, I don't see a city like Scranton pulling police chiefs like that. It would more be major cities. But again, I don't understand how this helps recruitment. Retention, maybe, but I guess we'll see. It's coming up on 5 o'clock here on WILK on this Tuesday, July 8th. Be careful of the rain out there. It is coming through the area. We'll be back.